Mostly when I think of football and justice, I think of Colin Kaepernick courageously taking a knee, showing how football and justice can be paired and how fraught that pairing can be as people redefined his witness as being disrespect of the flag rather than respect for all the black lives that are in jeopardy in our nation. I have the greatest respect for Mr. Kaepernick and for his bravery, making a statement that he knew he could, and indeed, so far, one that has jeopardized and maybe ended his career. But years before he proposed a place for justice in football, there was a very different pairing of football and justice in that episode you heard earlier this morning from Garrison Keillor's nostalgic radio show, A Prairie Home Companion. Garrison Keillor is now one of the many tarred with the brush of sexual harassment in his behavior towards a colleague. For a long time, he was the welcome, down-home voice of the Midwest, a staple on national public radio, a writer and wry commentator enjoyed by many, including many Unitarian Universalists. But as he made clear on his show more than once, the admiration wasn't actually reciprocated. In most mention of us, which he did more than once, he portrayed Unitarian Universalists as bemusing and superficial and silly. And, as you heard in the reading earlier, he thought we are wimps. Open-minded, peaceable wimps, with a lot of good intentions, but no passion, nothing to center us, and nothing to make us strong. We just stand around arguing and then go and run off in different directions. We are not out to win, just to have an interesting experience followed by a discussion. We disdain and criticize traditional religious experience. Our sermons are amusing. And we appreciate the finer things. And though we are small and low attendance, we always look on the sunny side. His skit is funny, and it was funnier in the actual broadcast, with the songs actually sung well and the dialogue fully acted out. And it's certainly not only us he picks on, right? The skit makes fun of lots of people. He says Baptists backslide and Jews are morose. There's a whole other song that I cut out. And he makes fun of Mormon undergarments and Lutheran coldness and Episcopalians for being an aging denomination. And his jabs are not, of course, wholly true for any of the faiths that they are making fun of, but they are recognizably relevant in some of what they say. I laughed when I heard this story the first time. It so happened that I was driving on my way home from leading a church service when I heard it. And I laughed. And it galled me at the same time. And it still does. It galls me because it only makes sense if we are recognizable in what he says. I have definitely known Unitarian Universalist churches like that, preoccupied only with themselves and their own internal values and issues. As any congregation knows, those internal values and issues can feel like a lot. Budgets and conflicts and behaviors and buildings and policies and agendas and bylaws and archives. And did I mention behaviors? Those are all part of any faith community, and they can be plenty, all by themselves, to juggle, to pull into alignment, to hold within a single structure. It is not surprising that sometimes any of us can lose sight of the point or to think that those are the point. Many years ago now, Star King Seminary President Rosemary Bray McNatt, who is an African-American minister in our movement, authored an article in our denomination's World magazine. And Rosemary wrote, "In the middle of my seminary education, my literary agent called me," because Rosemary had been a writer before she became a minister. "My literary agent called with an intriguing proposition. Would I be willing to be considered as co-writer of Coretta Scott King's autobiography? I was one of several people being considered, but the book's prospective editor was said to be partial to me. I was more than willing to talk about it, and a meeting with King was arranged at our editor's office. I didn't make the final cut, but that is not why I tell this story. During an hour of wide-ranging conversation, I mentioned to her that I was in seminary to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. What frankly surprised me was the look she gave me, one of respect and delight. "Oh, I went to Unitarian churches for years, even before I met Martin," she told me, explaining that she had been since college a member of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which was popular among Unitarians and Universalists. "And Martin and I went to Unitarian churches when we were in Boston." What surprised and saddened me most was what she said next, though I am paraphrasing, the gist of it was this. "We gave a lot of thought to becoming Unitarian at one time, but Martin and I realized we could never build a mass movement of black people if we were Unitarian." It was a statement, this is still Rosemary, that pierced my heart and troubled my mind then and now. I considered what our religious movement would be like if the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had chosen differently, had cast his lot with our faith instead of returning to his roots as an African-American Christian. Certainly no one with King's gifts would have lived in complete obscurity. I realized, however, that our liberal religious movement would have neutralized the greatest American theologian of the 20th century. Certainly his race would have been a primary barrier. In a religious movement engaged until the 1970s in the active discouragement of people of color who wished to join its ministerial ranks, King might have found his personal struggles to serve Unitarian Universalism at least as daunting as the Montgomery bus boycott. Even if race had disappeared as an issue, King might have found the barrier of theology insurmountable. Though from the very start of his theological training, he revealed a decided bent towards liberal religion. By the time his faith had been tried by the civil rights movement, King had said no to the sunny optimism of liberal faith. An optimism, frankly, untested in the heat of battle for liberty and dignity for African Americans. In his famous essay, Pilgrimage to Nonviolence, published in the Christian Centuries series, How My Mind Has Changed, in 1960, King made some trenchant comments about liberal theology, this is still Rosemary, that bear discussion. "There is one phase of liberalism that I hope to cherish always, its devotion to the search of truth, its refusal to abandon the best light of reason. It was the liberal doctrine of man that I began to question. The more I observed the tragedies of history and man's shameful inclination to choose the low road, the more I came to see the depths and strength of sin. I came to feel that liberalism had been all too sentimental concerning human nature and that it leaned toward a false idealism. I also came to see that liberalism's superficial optimism concerning human nature caused it to overlook the fact that reason is darkened by sin. Liberalism failed to see that reason by itself is little more than an instrument to justify man's defensive way of thinking. Reason, devoid of the purifying power of faith, can never free itself from distortions and rationalizations." And that's the end of the quote. If you look at the cover of your order of service today, you will see a blindfolded female figure, a stylized version of the classical depiction of justice. She holds in one hand scales and in the other hand a sword. So let me say here that I'm fine with that. A sense of balance and judicious evaluation and subduing bias, which is what is represented by her blindfold, and being very, very careful is not enough. It's not nearly enough. We also need to have a fire in the belly. We need sometimes to fight for what we believe in. Fight with the sword that is the pen. Fight with the sword that is our tongue. Fight with the sword that is our legs and feet. Marching, fight with our hands that hold the hands of others and thus swell our strength with numbers. The sword that is us, sharp and important, with a long reach and able to cut a long swath. I am not interested in winding flowers around images of what we fight against, or merely singing songs that lift up our own self-image. And I don't imagine you are either. That's actually not what we are about or what we are here for. And I want to be as clear as I can about that, because we have flower communion here, as do most Unitarian Universalist churches. And flower communion is a service that honors a vision of religious and spiritual freedom for all people who are represented by the variety and beauty of flowers. And it's a mistake to think that that vision is soft. It's powerful. It's actually so powerful that it was considered threatening, so threatening and subversive that the Nazis killed the Unitarian, Norbert Chopek, who created the Flower Communion Service in Eastern Europe in the 1930s. I want to be clear about that because we have transgender people in our congregations. They are part of us, just as everyone is part of us, just as everyone who feels you belong here belongs here. You and me, and those who are young, and those who are older, and those who are all colors of the rainbow, who are single or married, who have children or don't, all the myriad differences I can't list because it would take too long and I can't possibly catch them all. Yes, we proudly make this a home for all religious liberals, and that's actually not funny. And it's not even a weakness, and it's certainly not a quirk. It's our badge of honor. It sets us apart from every religious movement in this country that we were the first to make no distinction in how we treat marriage based on gender. We honor the humanity of anyone over anything else. Is that funny? No. It's great. Capital G, kind of great. And even though it is great, we know well that it is not enough. So I want to be clear, gathered across our differences in this great space of welcome and honor for all good souls who come here, that we reach out. We didn't just marry same-gender couples in our own churches and call it enough. We worked to make sure same-gender couples can marry anywhere in this country, and we made it happen. We were in the leadership of the marriage equality movement across this country, one state at a time. And look what happened. We are reaching out to compel our representatives to protect our climate and our future as deadly seriously as they must. And we reach out with our giving and food and service to support precious organizations offering sustenance and shelter and support to many people who need just that, all around us and among us. We are in community with our Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and other religious brethren in programs and projects that further our shared commitment to peace and justice. This time last year in Washington, D.C., our churches and parishioners' homes began to fill with people from across the country for the Women's March. And I was there, and I ran into Unitarian Universalists throughout the day, over and over again. People I knew in that immensely crowded city from across the country I ran into that day, and people I didn't know, but people who were wearing Standing on the Side of Love t-shirts, people who were wearing UU Church sweatshirts, people who were carrying UU Church banners. We were a significant presence in that crucial event that shifted the world's understanding of our presidential election and what it said about our nation. And let me be the first to admit that the sun is not shining, and more is required. We must engage more closely and more often with our interfaith friends, especially our Jewish and Muslim neighbors who receive prejudice treatment, including threats, including here in this city and this region and this state, all the time. We must work harder for the environment, as much for the larger world as for our own riverways and bay that hang in the same precarious balance. We have made in this church a declaration that Black Lives Matter, a declaration that is a commitment to ongoing learning and action, relationships and advocacy, a commitment that requires now our renewed discernment and attention. What do we do next as a congregation to make that declaration meaningful? What do we do next within and beyond these walls about immigrant rights and citizenship and families? And what about the military-industrial complex and the wars we are not finishing and the peace we are not making? And our free market system, which values profit over people, unless those people are those strange legal individuals known as corporations, in which case they are the most important people anywhere. Corporations matter. We don't need any signs to affirm that reality. And the National Rifle Association matters. Guns matter. Guns matter more than people. More even than children. Still. And whatever the tipping point is, if there is one, it wasn't the murder of tens of children in their school, and it isn't the shooting of hundreds at a concert. Having won a measure, a small, precious measure of gun control in this state last year, celebrations are in order. And then we choose our next commitment, the next difference we can make and must make, and we prepare and we go. We must do this all from a place of faith, faith in the world that we work for, faith in the power of goodness, faith in the strength of many, faith in the rightness, the destiny of people to come together eventually to make one world that is good to each and every one of us. This is what is before us. And I am fired up. I am eager to engage. I am looking at 2018 and working to discern what justice priorities we have before us. Will you join me in committing to 5 significant things we can do this year to make a difference? You have heard already, the East Side Monthly came out last week profiling some new East Side clergy. We were united not only by our gender, but by our belief that was lifted up in that article, that faith requires action. Faith has to be manifest in what we do. There are important initiatives before our state legislature this year. There are important opportunities to green our lives in our homes and in this church. There are important possibilities for growing our multicultural, multiracial awareness and capacities. So please be in touch with our Standing on the Side of Love team as we work to discern this year's justice priorities. Please be in touch with our Green Sanctuary team as they work to make our campus more ecologically responsible and faithful. Please be in touch with me If you would like to be part of a team that is going to New York City this spring to attend a remarkable weekend conference about doing powerful and effective multicultural, multiracial, interfaith, and justice work with joy and inspiration. Get ready to staff our sanctuary church, or lobby at the State House, or learn to compost, finally. Think about what your five commitments might be. Think about whether you would do them alone or with others. Think about what you feel capable of. Think about what matters most to you. And take time to make your choices thoughtfully, because I will be circling back to you here in worship another Sunday about what you've chosen. I hope and pray that 2018 will be a strong and beautiful year of living what we believe, all of us, because we are not soft tendrils. I have never been a soft tendril in my life. Yes, I have bent, but never broken. This congregation is a congregation of survivors and caregivers and pillars and leaders and workers and believers and doers. We are fair and fierce, persistent and passionate, caring and courageous, and a force to be reckoned with. Like all denominations, we have some communities that spend their time and treasure just on staying as they are. That is not us, and that is not our movement. Let us remember how we have had clergy and congregants in the vanguard and leadership of every major struggle in this country for religious freedom, for the abolition of slavery, for public education, for women's rights, against McCarthyism, for civil rights, for gay rights. Again and again, we have been in the thick of those fights, and we have won. We have an important year before us. Every year before us is important. Live into your power. Love your power. Own your power. It is in and all around you. Justice is our promise, and it is our charge. So happy New Year, everybody, and let's go. Amen.